All right, welcome everyone to the Security Breaks podcast, where the rubber meets the road in automotive cybersecurity. Join us as we explore the latest in protecting our vehicles from digital threats. Each episode, we dive under the hood of the automotive security industry to bring you the insider's view of what keeps your vehicle safe. Whether you're an industry professional, a car enthusiast, or just someone curious about how technology is reshaping the way we think about automotive cybersecurity, you are in the right place. From interviews with leading experts to analysis of the latest cybersecurity threats and defenses, we're here to break down the complex topics into easy-to-understand insights, basically the PowerPoint of automotive cybersecurity. So buckle up, let's get ready to shift gears into the world of automotive security. You won't want to miss this ride. Security Breaks starts now. First of all, Slava, thank you so much for being here with us today. We're very excited to have you on the show and looking forward to addressing some of the main topics that we're facing in the industry today.
Thank you for inviting me, John. Happy to be here.
Great. Slava, I think we've known each other since 6-7 years now, I think.
Yeah, quite a few. It's been a long time.
The first time we were sitting together in a meeting room and you guys were presenting the Cybellum ideas and concepts. That's quite some time ago, but I'm happy that we've stayed in contact and now Cybellum has matured lots in the last few years. But before we jump into all that, let's take a little look at past in the history. Slava, will you tell us a little bit about where you come from? Where'd you grow up? How did you get into this space?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Israel and studied software engineering before going to the army and serving in the Israeli, in the IDF. Was dealing actually with project in IoT cybersecurity for quite a few years in during my military service. There I also met my co-founder, Michael, and many of our early employees in Cybellum. We're dealing, security was offensive, defensive for IoT devices. Back then, product security wasn't even a term. And cybersecurity for automotive, probably when we met, John, was just, concepts or part of innovation groups where we're just, thinking what can be an attack in a connected vehicle in the future. Yeah. And then when discharged from the army, I actually was about to start my PhD when Michael, my co-founder, approached me and said, let's start the company together and do things around the area, that we were dealing with in the army and try to productize many of the concepts that we were mainly doing, manually, try to bring that into the business world, into the automotive world, where we found back then the automotive world super interesting, super complex, again, mainly because of the unique relationship and the unique supply chain, right? That the entire kind of this automotive world is built on a very complex supply chain. And I saw that when we discharged from the army as a very unique opportunity when we can, I'm always interested in the interaction between, technology and business and where you can find solution to complex problem in this interaction. So that's basically how we started Cybellum. That's where I came from.
Okay. Thank you. And was the idea always the same for Cybellum? Did you guys, when you started Cybellum, what was the original idea behind it?
No, absolutely not. We had a few pivots, since we started kind of completely different area of actually detecting vulnerabilities, finding zero days. And we developed an automatic solution to detect issues, find vulnerabilities on embedded components, which we still have part of our solution today, but we shifted, back then quite a lot from a detection solution to a management solution. We started from wide IoT, then we focused into automotive with one of our advisors that used to run the product security or the vehicle security back then from Mercedes-Benz, which actually was Daimler back then, and he brought us to the automotive world. So it was a long journey, at least 2-3 years before we came up to the idea or the solution that we have today, is the mission that we have today, and you know, also the focus on automotive market.
Yeah, that's you know, really interesting when you have a startup and you think you're going in one direction, and then before you know it, you're not detecting anymore. You're creating platforms or wherever. You just never know where that intellectual property is going to make value for the industry.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, and I think that's when I'm meeting today entrepreneurs and or startup founders that ask me like, what's the best advice or bad thing they can do, is actually not be in love with their solution. It should be very, you know, adaptive from customers, the market is moving, and you know, some assumptions and pieces that we had even a year ago are not anymore, like we tested them, they're not valid, the market goes in another direction, the challenges are different. And yeah, you know, a startup is a journey where you know where you start, but you definitely can find yourself each year in a completely different area. And you know, that's the fun part in this journey.
It's definitely part of the fun, right? You know, building something and creating value that's actually needed on the market, is, I find that so interesting. And we'll come to that more later when we talk about what Cybellum's actually doing now. But I want to take a step back and talk about the automotive security industry in general, because we've been working on automotive cybersecurity for some time now. It's a topic since, I don't know, 8 years, maybe 10 years at the maximum. We had this cross section between IT related competencies and the automotive products, and bringing these two together was painful, I know. And I'm sure you also can talk about some of the pain points as well. But let's talk about where you think we are right now, because we're not perfect, right? We still have a lot of work to do. But we've also made good advances over the last, you know, 8 to 10 years. What's your feeling? Where are we right now?
Yeah, so definitely we've made, you know, tons of progress from just being, you know, projects that led by research or innovation teams to really programs and a full even practices that we have today within OEMs and suppliers. By the way, I mentioned that there is a big, you know, variety in terms of maturity between OEMs, between suppliers, between even, you know, the regions in the world. So it's really hard to talk about this industry as an industry, because you have some OEMs that are super advanced and have tons of things in place, and the others are still lagging and still trying to understand how the regulation looks like or how to implement the regulation. And that's, you know, the interesting part of this industry. Now, obviously, the regulation helped a lot. It was the UNEC WP29 regulation that drives everything from budget, teams, practices, even alignment between, you know, OEMs and suppliers, which to me is one of the biggest gaps and problems I'm seeing actually today. And also the standard, the ISO SAE 21434 standard, which is, I think, the first standard that is actually saying, you know, what you need to do. By the way, a fun fact, when we, you know, I was involved from the very early days of the ISO SAE 21434, the drafting committee and so on. And when it's just started, I think it was 2019 or 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Back then we, you know, you touched the IT side, the product security side. Back then there were very loud voices to have product security under functional safety. People were just arguing that there is no room for a new product security. It's just part of functional safety, and then just keep it under the ISO 26262, and that's it. Just another, you know, another pillar in the safety world. And I believe today that's, you know, I think that's one evidence of the long process that we all as an industry went through. Like today, I think there is no question that product security is a practice for itself, by itself.
That's actually a really good point. Maybe can you explain why, in your point of view, that safety and security should be two separate things?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think just the magnitude or the size of this, right? Functional safety have, you know, their own practices and the HARA that you need to create and the audit that you need to go through and all the processes that you need to have. And just think of product security, like with OEMs and tier ones that we're talking with, they have dozens of people that are just running that. So just the size of those two, you know, practices are completely different. Now, I think, you know, obviously every, or actually not every, but more like a Venn diagram that they have a lot of interaction, you know, or overlap between them, right? That you have many security issues that can be, you know, safety issues, but many of them are not. Like, just think of privacy issues, or if I'm stealing a credit card data from the vehicle, it has nothing to do with safety. And, you know, the component, the product can be completely safe, but obviously, you know, it's not secure in terms of, you know, cybersecurity and so on. The other thing is obviously that there is a lot more leaning towards software in the cyber, in the security space versus the hardware, the bigger hardware, I think, emphasis in the safety space. Again, there is overlap. Both are applicable to both sides, but there are completely different practices, different set of skill set that you need to have in your organization. And, you know, also in terms of, I think one of the main differences, as I see that, is everything happening in the post-production. The functional safety is a relatively static world, right? You get to SOP, you did your safety test. It's true that in the next version, over there, update or whatever, you might need to recheck things, but there is nothing like there is new vulnerability out there in 10 years from now, even though you might be perfectly safe and you change nothing. But security is a dynamic world, is an ever-changing world. And I think that's a key point to understand for safety people. If you need to convince them, that's your argument.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I didn't even think about this SOP argumentation, but you're completely right. You know, after SOP, do you have to update your safety strategy? Do you have to update or reevaluate the safety, the HARA that you've produced? And I think that's a good argumentation. It, for me, the competencies are also a big topic, the goals themselves. But I always like to argue on the data level. You know, if you look at the data for safety relevant functions, for me, you have to make sure that the data has integrity and is available at the time it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come over to the security world and you also have integrity and availability, but you also have the confidentiality and the authenticity, depending on your company's, you know, overall guiding policies and governance. But that's always for me to show, okay, even if you're looking at the data level itself, there is a difference.
Yeah, there are the additional considerations. No, absolutely. There are separate things. And another, by the way, way to look at it is the complexity that the standards for the, or the regulation is today adding from a traceability point of view, right? So that's another point that you need to trace things back to your decision in the development process and so on, sometimes 15 years after the vehicle is out. Now, in the safety world, again, it pretty much stops at SOP. You have all your documentation and it's there. But when you get to, you know, to the auditing of the security, it's a completely different opera and scenarios.
I really like this discussion because, you know, it's there was a lot of discussion at the time, you know, doing the ISO 21434 and everything, even during the WP29 activities. But I think we went the right way. I think with the majority actually won this discussion. And of course, we see that in the standards and the regulations now. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned early about maturity of OEMs and suppliers and everything. What do you think? How is the maturity of the OEMs and suppliers? I mean, it's not the right to generalize, I guess, you know, and group them all in one industry, so to say. But can you think of an OEM, and we're not going to say any names here, but can you think of an OEM that's got security done right, or they're going in that direction?
Well, yeah, you know, as I said, it varies a lot. And I think, you know, I've met with a couple of OEMs during the last 12 months that even if they don't have everything in place yet, they have the right framework or they have the right vision. You know, they understand two main things. One, that it's a long-term process. It's nothing that will be just, you know, I put tool in place and I'm done. And the second thing, they understand that they will need to do things on an ongoing basis and to scale. And I'll give you an example. We have, you know, met with OEMs that you would say they are very mature. They claim they have, or not claim, they actually have a CSMS system in place. And they even got, you know, they've gone through auditing and they got the, you know, type approval for their vehicles. And everyone is, you know, really happy because they sound very advanced. And exactly what the regulation is asking, and you know, in the and following the ISO standard and so on. However, when you really try to understand with them how everything is done in that CSMS so-called system that they have in place, you understand that everything is based on Excel spreadsheets and manual processes, and you know, some playbooks that they have documented in Word documents, which are good enough to pass as, you know, an auditing, because you know, you have things in place. But when you actually need to do that, every project that you have on every component or from tier one side or for every type of vehicle, and you'll try to scale with it, and then sometimes even to really go through an auditing, not just to ask that, not that asking just for the process, but actually going to probe some specific working products that you have from your development that was there 5 years ago, this is going to be a challenge. So I think that, you know, there, obviously, even for the more mature areas, there is still another maturity scale where you actually, from having something in place to have something that is scalable in place, that's also a different, you know, level of maturity. And honestly, I don't think that I've met any OEM that already have today this full mature, scalable solution in place, but there are a few that have it as a three-year plan that they're going to put things in place, that they're going to invest in tools, people, processes, and align all of them to one, you know, systematic system.
Yeah, definitely. And I always like to break it down between processes, methods, organization, and tooling or technology, right? And exactly what you said, you see a lot of Excel use going on right now, right? But I think that's actually okay, because actually the processes, okay, so let's start at methods first, because usually you have to understand how to do something before you start assigning roles to it, right? So you develop a method, and then this method, then you develop a process, and then you get people involved, you get the organization built up with the competencies they need, and then you start to look at the tooling or the system to make this a scalable thing. And usually the easiest thing to start with to even test out whether something is working or not is Excel. So it's really good. First of all, we see some maturity in the OEMs, suppliers, and so on that are already to that level where they're using Excel. And I think that's a good sign, because moving too fast, of course, is also bad, right? You start to implement tools that don't bring any value or whatever.
Correct.
And so you have to discover, and this part of that maturity in the industry. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. I don't think, you know, that the other way around is better. Like, as you said, that, you know, OEMs are running and just implementing tools and have tools in place that they really don't know how to, you know, to configure or set their internal process in place. Tools or technologies are definitely not the solution. You said any framework that should involve the people, the process, the methods, and so on. And yeah, it's okay if it starts with Excel spreadsheets and then scales, but that's, you know, that's a step. That's a stepping step for a complete program.
Definitely. And I don't mean to say that Excel is not a good or bad thing, but actually what normally happens is we start with the tool and we work backwards somehow, right? So we say, okay, we have Excel, we're going to put some data in here. Okay, we need a process for it. We need people for it. And then the method is somehow written the years after. But yeah, very interesting topic for the maturity of the OEMs. What's the worst thing that you've seen? Anything that you're just like, oh my goodness?
Yeah, you know, where to start? It's sometimes you're meeting OEMs, sometimes even top OEMs, top tier OEMs from, at least from their brand and vehicle perspective. And you see that they are completely blind. And you just think, oh my God, I hope there won't be incident on one of their vehicles. Blind in terms of, you try to even ask them from asset management or inventory perspective, like, okay, tomorrow, if you have a vulnerability in one of your vehicles, do you know the other vehicles that this, the same software is installed on? Or do you have any understanding to map the software to your vehicles? Like, how is the incident response? If you actually will have, I'm kind of lucky today that we still don't see dozens of actual or even at all like actual incidents to vehicles. Because if we'll see some of them, you'll see, that OEMs really have no data. Some of the OEMs have really no data to cope with that. And for me, this is mind blowing, right? Who can on the OEM side really take the liability or to sleep at night that he knows that if tomorrow they have an incident, they don't have the tools to cope with that. That's, I can give specific examples, but that's like, as a theme or as an idea, I think that's to me, that's security people. That's mind blowing.
Yeah. No, we don't want to call anyone out here on this podcast, but I think we want to make people aware, right? The whole thing is that some OEMs or some suppliers, whoever it might be, they tend to think that if they can't identify what an incident is at all, if they have no way to recognize whether or not their products are affected, then, well, they're just not affected, right? But that's not a very proactive security stance, I would have to argue. Mm-hmm. So
until they're affected, then right. There is a problem. Yeah.
But if that's the strategy they want to take on, we'll see how well that works in the future. But I think security is going to have a profound impact. Here in the next few years, we're going to see some different things going on. And you're going to start to see, when we do start seeing attacks happen, you're going to see brand damage, So it is going to affect your ability to sell cars. And not necessarily for the suppliers themselves, right? The suppliers have no brand specifically that's shown to the end customer, but we are going to see the effects of cybersecurity and the effects of non-maturity in particular companies in the future. So there's no getting away from it. It's just, we're going to see it happen here in the next few years.
Yep.
Well, we talked about OEMs a little bit. What do you think about the suppliers? How are they doing?
Traditionally suppliers are following OEMs, right? Are following OEMs requirements, right? They are kind of from both sides. If the OEM are not demanding anything, they will not do anything. They're just, they're focused on the bill of materials to reduce costs. And that's, they were traditionally project companies getting specification from OEMs and developing it. Now, they also understand, I'm today also Cybellum is part of the LG group. So also understand that in order to meet the regulation, it's not enough just to wait for requirements, but actually they need to have also a CSMS system in place, for example, because they also don't want to chase after requirements and chase after evidence for each and every project. So I think, that the tier ones are very much aligned with the OEMs. And in some areas, the tier ones are even more advanced. Even like LG, they were, thinking about this a couple of years ago already, part of their strategy, and other also tier one strategies also to offer cybersecurity services, right? So to understand that it can also be another additional revenue stream for them. To protect or to add security or risk protection level on top of the components that they ship to the OEMs. So some of them are more advanced. I don't see great difference today in terms of security maturity between OEMs and tier ones. And I actually believe that tier ones will eventually become the cybersecurity providers to OEMs. OEMs will, I think, will understand that there is no competitive advantage in having or building a lot of the things internally. And traditionally, tier ones are there and looking always to, to expand their portfolio.
I definitely agree with you. When you look at OEMs, they basically design and assemble and then give the requirements to the tier ones, twos, threes, and the OEMs are bringing that all together. And I wonder if that'll happen also with cybersecurity. So, but that leads me to my next question, actually. We talked a little bit about the status of the automotive cybersecurity today, but let's talk about where it's going, because I think this is the interesting topic and what you were starting to get into. Tell us where you think this market is going to go. What's going to happen in the next, you know, 5-10 years? What are we going to see?
So, no, there are multiple dimensions to these questions. First of all, from the market perspective, I think there will be a lot of consolidation of tools and companies and, you know, even startups into the more mature tier ones. You know, as soon as this entire practice one is changing from the innovation areas of OEMs, the actual business that they need, and traditionally OEMs are doing business with tier ones, so we'll see this consolidation in, I believe, in this entire market of companies. Now, there are other big changes that are happening now that the industry is going through that are just tied very closely to cybersecurity. Take the SDV era, right? That everyone today is talking about, the software-defined vehicle and so on. So obviously there are cybersecurity implications for that. Maybe not, you know, dramatic ones, but I even just think that you need to manage the risk on a different level, like what you used to manage on an ECU level or, you know, vehicle level. You might start manage on a platform level or even a function level. Now have OEMs that want to manage the granularity of the risk management or what they define as asset is a simple function or capability that eventually they can see across, you know, multiple platforms and so on, or software that is going in multiple areas, and they want to manage the entire risk, the updatability and everything on this function level. So these trends like the SDV or all the electrification or the autonomous driving, obviously, will just introduce different method or different hierarchies that you need to manage the risk on, or additional attack vectors that you just will need, you know, to constantly close and chase after, similarly to what we see in the IT world, right? There is constantly additional capabilities which introduce additional attack vectors. Like, you know, before the cloud era, you just need to defend your premise. Now you have cloud, so you need to protect it. In the cloud, you also have different, you know, functions, the serverless, the Lambda, and so on. So you need also to protect it. So the same applies to the automotive world. Like you have additional capabilities, and we'll see more and more of them, and you'll just be introducing additional, you know, attack vectors that you'll need to slowly consider and close one by one. Now, at the same time, I think that all OEMs and all tier ones will have established CSMS systems that, you know, includes all the things that we discussed before, the people, the methods, the tools, and will have a systematic kind of, you know, approach to how to do product security or how to do vehicle security throughout the entire life cycle. I believe that in, you know, 5 years, we won't see any more siloed activities like we see today. A great example for that is the TARA, right? That still today it is being done in the design and the concept phase. That's pretty much it, right? Then it's you pretty much keep it in that phase and almost never go back to. I believe the siloed activities won't be part of the practice, and you'll have one practice that all activities are kind of connected, interconnected, and you'll have really a risk profile that aggregate data from all activities that you are doing in your organization and from all attack vectors. And I believe that in, you know, looking 5-10 years, the biggest challenges I see today in automotive cybersecurity will also be reduced. And this is the supply chain challenge, right? Still, you're building the vehicle, and even many OEMs have their own internal, even kind of tier one or software house, but still a lot of the components you keep getting them from their suppliers. And this is going to be hard to change. And as, you know, as secure you as an OEM or your CSMS system that you have or your VSOC that you're creating. Eventually, you're as secure as your weakest link, right? And if you want to be able to apply all the methods, the great methods that you build internally for the OEM to all of your suppliers, it's going to be hard to keep the security to the level that you want. And I believe that's a challenge. And I believe that's something, you know, through more collaboration or tools and methods that are cross OEMs and suppliers, and, you know, this gap going to be shrink. And, you know, that's another challenge that hopefully we're going to be overcome. And of course, there are, you know, the future things like the quantum computing and autonomous driving and so on. But I believe these are just part of, you know, wider problems that's just going to be solved like in other areas.
I think completely correct. Like you're in my mind, I guess I would have to say. And so regarding automotive or autonomous driving or software-defined vehicle, it doesn't matter. These are all just technologies, and it doesn't matter what function it is or whatever. Everything has to be built on the premise that we need cybersecurity, right? So cybersecurity in vehicles is an enabling function. It doesn't support the function. It just turns it on or off. If you have no security, then autonomous driving cannot be successful. It's the same with just regular driving. So I think cybersecurity is so critical for driving future technologies. But
absolutely. Yeah, so, that's, you know, that's a zero or one. Either you have it and you can tell your vehicles, or you don't. Then you're out of the game.
That's right. And I'm excited for the future to see what happens with the attack vectors, right? We don't see so much attacks right now. You know, it's a lot of research, a lot of white hat type activities. But we're soon going to get in that area where it becomes weaponized, right? And we are going to be able to identify, see attacks or unexplainable things until after investigation. And I want to see who the attack actors are, who they're attacking and why, and see if because in the risk assessment, we're theoretically somehow protecting against actors that we don't know about, right? And so we need to see if whether or not our Terra, our risk assessment, whatever we've done in the design phase actually matches to what we see in the field. So as the vehicles start to come out, that the UNECE is now taking place, right? In 2022, I believe. Also, it's required until July 2024 for all new architectures. So all of these UNECE relevant vehicles are going to start coming out into the world. They're cyber secure or more secure. Let's don't forget, security is not an absolute. It never will be. It's always something we have to work on. But then we're going to start to see these vehicles, and we have detection systems in place. We also have CSMS in place, and we'll be able to understand what's going on in the vehicle, if anything, right? If vehicles are being attacked and so on. So I'm really excited to see where that goes in the future, to see if what we plan for in the TARA and the risk assessment is actually what's happening.
So. Yeah, yeah. And by the way, it's a great challenge because you are trying to cope with smart guys that will be just, you know, maybe probing your system in 15 years or so. And the attack methods, the scale of things, and the speed of developing and weaponizing maybe vulnerabilities in the era of AI and so on going to be completely different. So it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
And I think it's super important that researchers or people looking into these types of things, actually some of the most innovative minds are not in the OEMs or the suppliers. They're the people looking at it outside. So if you're a researcher, if you're a hacker, if you're listening to this podcast right now, just know that you are making a difference. However, please understand that these vulnerabilities, these whatever it might be, attacks, can influence the safety of the vehicle. And please make sure that you do responsible disclosure, talk to the OEM, talk to the supplier, whichever products are affected, and make sure that they know about them so that they can make sure that your friends, your family, your community is safe from these bugs. So be proactive in the security community. So, sorry, my little 2 cents talk there about
that's important, you know, what we do actually matters.
So we're getting to the end of the podcast here. I want to talk a little bit about Cybellum now and how it's going to actually impact or create a positive impact on the industry. What is it bringing and what challenges is actually Cybellum addressing? You know, is it a tool? Is it a process? Is it a organization that offers services? Give us a little bit of the 5 second Cybellum.
Yeah. So obviously Cybellum changed a lot, you know, throughout the years. And since, you know, we've been partnering with LG in the last 2 years. So we also matured a lot, seeing the product security of an OEM, of a tier one, sorry, from the inside, and also being in the central kind of area between the tier one and the OEMs with all the requirements that are being received and how to to comply with that, and the incident monitoring, incident response team that is in the monitoring, and so on. So today, obviously, you know, we are on a mission to do, we are playing in the automotive security world. We are on a mission to secure products and vehicles and components across their entire life cycle. And what we are offering is a solution. We are building a centralized, when we're coming to OEMs or tier ones, we will build a centralized product asset inventory first and then manage the cybersecurity risks throughout the entire vehicle lifecycle with what we call a CSMS cockpit, a cybersecurity management system cockpit that is actually purpose-built for OEMs and suppliers. And this is a solution, meaning it includes both technology tools and our platform and services. We call the synergy services, because obviously every OEM and every tier one are different. Everyone is a unique snowflake with different, you know, tool chain, different environment, different risk process, risk quantification, and also different risk decision-making process. And you need to have a solution eventually that will follow and will integrate to the unique environment of each OEM, and also to configure the unique risk process and the playbooks that each OEM has. So we have this platform, again, we call the CSMS cockpit, that is essentially is integrating to the various cybersecurity activities that you have in place, from your TARA to vulnerability management, requirements management, pen test, pass test, incident response, and so on, aggregating all the data and in some management layer on top of that for each one of the activity, and eventually results in two things. One is a contextual risk, it's actually taking all this siloed activity and bringing in context to all of them around the asset, and also producing all the working products that are required by the regulation and the ISO standard. So you will be able to create these documents, the working and the evidence that are needed for the auditing in scale, basically with a click of a button. So it's usually like, well, maybe just to connect it to what we said at the beginning, there is no magic. It's usually a project, a long-term project, when you start with identifying, you know, your gaps, your ecosystem and your tool chain as an OEM, your risk process, create a solution concept, integrate it product line by product line, and so on, and creating, you know, we are here to redefine the product security practice in the automotive space.
And where do you think it's going to go in the future? Like, is there any kind of, give us a little teaser of what's coming from Cybellum in the next few years?
So, from a technological perspective, first, we are very heavy on AI. We're adding a lot of Gen AI and LLM to the system. We believe that that's going to solve a lot of the efficiency issues that we have today. Just think that you can pad a lot of the data that you have from your TARA, from your requirements management system, from your vulnerability decisions that you've made along the years, from your penetration testing project, and so on, into one big LLM system, then basically query it and create the dynamic risk assessment that you actually need. We already introduced first LLM chatbot that you, for example, in Cybellum system, you can come today and ask, like, what vulnerabilities are affecting this and these products that they have, or how Log4j is affecting my components, how to mitigate the vulnerability, and so on. And with this, you can, you know, interact with this chatbot that is based on LLM and get a lot of answer. And we believe that that's the future. We're going to change a lot of the technological stack in Cebellum towards, you know, AI, Gen AI, and we believe the future is there. And we see that, you know, our CSMS cockpit going to scale and also adding, you know, in the future years, components that are between OEMs and suppliers. So you'll be able as an OEM not only to manage the risk for your company, right, for your brand, but actually to be able to enforce and do the governance for your processes, you define it, across your suppliers. It's a challenging problem. Oh, you know, there is a lot of areas, challenges between OEMs and tier ones and between the tier ones and tier twos. But we believe that, you know, with the right dedications and the right people and the right efforts, this is also solvable as we look forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sounds like an interesting product development coming up. I love the AI and machine learning models thing. I also believe that this is kind of the, we're going to see hundreds of use cases for building small models, which are specifically dedicated for a specific use case, like categorization, prioritization, even using large language models, regenerative AI for enriching data in inside descriptions or titles, and all this stuff is going to be kind of ability to reduce the workload, increase the amount of information that we have at the right time points to make better decisions. And I don't think we're going to get to the point quite yet where we say, listen, we're going to let someone take over decisions or build decisions into models. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get to that point for quite some time. But at least preparing all of the information for having better decisions while reducing the effort and impact on your resources, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a decision support system. It shouldn't replace you. And I don't, yeah, obviously in areas where we have safety aspect and security aspect, it won't replace, you know, us in the coming future.
Well, Slava, thank you so much for being on the show today. I think I can talk all day about this, but we do need to bring the podcast to an end. Before we let you go, is there something you want to let the audience know, insights or something to come? Anything you want to say before we end?
No, I think we discussed quite a lot of the things, John, and thank you for having me on this podcast. Great initiative. And yeah, we've gone through a long way in the automotive security world, but we said we didn't get this far only to get this far. There is a long way ahead of us to really to create, you know, a secure vehicles and to make sure they are secure for their entire life cycle. And that keeps me pumped and excited about the opportunity ahead.
That's right. And maybe on the next podcast, Slava, we'll talk about what end of life really means and what we should be considering as end of life. This is something I think we can discuss for an entire podcast very easily.
Yeah, we need at least an hour for on that next time.
All right. Well, Slava, thank you so much. As I said, we have many topics coming up in the next podcast. Please remember, responsible disclosure is the way. We appreciate researchers, hackers, and so on. Be a part of the positive cybersecurity community. Responsibly disclose your vulnerabilities. You can do this through OEMs, suppliers, the people directly affected, or you can also come to ASRG, Automotive Security Research Group. We are also a certified numbering authority from Mitra, and we can also be a third nonprofit party for responsibly disclosing your work. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast today, Slava. Thank you, sir, and we look forward to having you the next time.
All right, so that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed our discussion. Tune in next time for the next episode of Security Breaks Podcast. Please feel free to send us feedback at securitybreaks@asrg.io. Review the links in the description and get involved with the Automotive Security Research Group. Make an impact in the automotive security industry. Be a part of the solution. Join ASRG by visiting www.asrg.io. ASRG, Automotive Security, Community Driven. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are the personal view of those that have made them. They do not represent views or opinions of any past, present, or future employers.